and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the
Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, a Friday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson hanging out with us, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. Coming up an hour from now, Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest 41 is the Mike podcast, will be with us. And then Mick Schaefer joins us in the noon hour. We'll talk some NFL football today, obviously, with Matt Derrick. We'll talk some college basketball today, and of course, we will talk some Major League Baseball as the Kansas City Royals continue to just win night after night after night. And if they keep doing this, they won't lose again. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Prove me wrong.
58-4 seems realistic.
If they keep winning every night, they won't lose, Sterling. Where's the false statement in that?
Was it Trent Dilfer? You can't lose and expect to win the game.
That's right.
That's right. That's a great pull. That is a fantastic pull. And the Royals have been winning, and they're expecting to win the game. It has been, beyond what expectations or hope or some of the optimism that was there, they have blown so far past the what can they be. Because, Sterling and I were talking yesterday, Jack, about, we looked at this Royals team and it was like the first few series, stay afloat, right? Don't drown. Just don't get beat down. Don't crush the optimism and the excitement of the Royals fans before you can kind of get into the summer. And they're not drowning. They're swimming. We said they're Michael Phelps right now. They are not only drowning, they are freaking swimming as fast as anybody in the water. And that's way beyond even my, hope and optimism. Because of, obviously the starting staff, the bullpen, finally gave up a run. But the offense has just been so different. And it's fascinating to me that we talk about, just try to compete a little bit at the beginning. And then you can really start rolling. And instead they come out and they're right there in second place in the playoffs and putting together one of the best offenses in baseball, and we know that they have one of the best starting staffs in baseball right now in these, 13 games so far.
Yeah, I looked at the first 32 games of this season, and I said, if you can tread water, if you can tread water in those first 32, and I think I pegged them at about 14-18. If you get to that point, I feel good about where you're at, because we all know that once the summer hits, that's typically when sometimes a Royals team that can compete hits their stride, because April's what's buried them every single time. Mm-hmm. I looked at the first couple series in April. Aside from the White Sox, they've played three straight playoff teams. You had Minnesota, right, that won the Central last year. Baltimore won the East, and the Astros won the West. So those were all games where it was, if you can just not get blown out in one of those series, you can be competitive. I thought what the Baltimore series was probably going to be what we saw in those first couple of series, that they might rattle off one, but they're just not there yet. And they've blown past expectations so far. Now they're 9-4. It's only 13 games in. But when you win 7 in a row at any point in the season, that's something you can hold on to. And when you've got the best run differential in baseball, they're not just barely beating teams and then getting blown out. That's what I've heard a lot is the comparison to the 21 team that was 16-9. They had a negative run differential when they were 16-9. It was the definition of being a lucky team. And when they lost, they would lose by 8 or 9 runs. This team is bludgeoning teams in their path, and when they lose, they either had a lead in that game or they were tied. The last time they trailed for multiple innings in a game was opening day. That's how long it's been. They've been right there or blown it. And look at the Baltimore series. They could be winning, what would that be, 10 in a row now? The last time I thought they truly lost a game was opening day, because they never led at any point of that game. Every other game they've been tied, leading, or leading by a lot going into the ninth inning, and that to me, it's just wildly impressive.
Dylan, can we have clip number two? This is how it sounded yesterday in the first inning, which was just a blast. Well, Bobby had that one, but there were other things going on in the first inning. This is how it sounded with the nine-run first.
Vinny Pasquantino at the plate. A career-high 5 RBIs for Vinny last night. Breaking ball smacked back up the middle. Base hit into center field. Garcia's in to score. Wynn races around third. He comes to home like a blur. Two-run single, Vinny Pasquantino. Three batters into the bottom of the first. The Royals have a 2-0 lead.
And that's up the right field line and down into the corner. Vinny will stop at third. Melendez has a double. And the Royals have two more in scoring position with one out.
Breaking ball slapped softly toward right field. Drops in. Base hit. Pasquantino's in to score standing. Wilson holds Melendez at third. And Velasquez on the throw all the way home advances to second. It's the fifth hit of the inning for the Royals. And it's 3-0 in the bottom of the first. Breaking ball bounced softly back of the middle. Pass the drum in. Infield. Base hit into center. Melendez scores. Here comes Velasquez motoring around third. He crosses standing. Two-run single. Nick Lofton. It's a Royals hit parade in the bottom of the first.
Base hit center field. That is a 7-run bottom of the first inning. Junior gets it up into the wind. Deep right field. Gone! And the Royals hang a 9 on the scoreboard in the first inning.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it just, you know, that first inning, what they were doing, and they have now batted around 5 times in the 13 games. I mean, we gave out the stat yesterday that they had batted around 4 times in 12 games, and then we joked about, well, one of these next 3 games, they're going to bat around because, you know, they are doing it every 3 games.
It's math.
It's just math, and they literally did it that day. So now they've done it 5 times in the 13 games that they have had an inning where they've batted around, and 7 times this year a team has scored at least 7 runs in an inning, and the Royals have 3 of those 7. Royals 3, the rest of Major League Baseball 4.
So obviously the run differential for Kansas City, best in the majors, but let's talk about the AL specifically here.
Okay.
Most runs scored, fewest runs allowed. That's going to play.
Typically.
It's going to play when you have the best offense and the best pitching staff and the defense to go along with it. That'll work. And Jack and I were joking because I think run differential not always can be the best indicator of how good a team is because sometimes you'll get these blowouts. But when you're consistently blowing teams out, I think there's more to gain from it. I said, let's hope this is not like the Pirates, and we said it was last year. They had a great first month and a half. They were like 22-12. Everyone's like, well, look at these upstart Pirates. Look at them. And then they fell off. But they were winning games by 1. There was a whole bunch of errors to end games that went in their favor. We're not seeing that with the Royals. They're 9-4, and as we mentioned, could easily be 11-2. That's what is so impressive about this 9-4 start. There's nothing fluky about what they're doing.
Well, it's unfortunate they're playing in the difficult Central, the only division to have 3 different teams playing 600 baseball. So if they were in any other division, it's tough that you're in that division. Like they would be, you know, they'd be leading the West if they played against the scrubs like the Astros and the Rangers and the Angels and the Mariners, etc. If they were playing against those, you know, fish, they would be in first place. But they have to deal with this division. That's what's really difficult.
You look at the AL Central, too. It's like Cleveland, of all teams that you would think you'd know, it's pitching that is going to make them a good baseball team. And they were, you know, clobbering teams as well. They had a little bit of a weaker schedule. They've seen Chicago. They've seen Oakland, though. Oakland now has a better record than Houston. So maybe watch out for Oakland in that bullpen a little bit.
They're only good on the road, though.
Terrible at home.
Oakland's 1-6 at home.
Well, you'll probably continue to see that when they move to Sacramento.
Yeah,
that they go on the road and go, okay, this is what a major league ballpark
feels like.
Okay, great. Man, you want to talk about no free agents. Who is signing with the A's the next few years to go play?
The Sacramento A's?
What about a long-term deal so then you can get to Vegas?
Maybe. I don't know.
Doug Christie might be involved, or Peja Stojakovic, maybe.
You think so? When they win, will they put like a green beam above the stadium like they did with the Kings? I think you should do that. There's also something to be said. You know, it made me think when you talked about the A's losing at home. There's something to be said for the Royals and what they're doing at Kauffman. Because how many times, like last year, my brother joked that, you know, he's got a partial season ticket package and he wasn't seeing a win. Like, he'd go out there and they would lose. 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 Eventually, you get kind of tired of just going and watching bad baseball. When Bobby Witt Jr. pulls his hand inside on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball from Duran with bases loaded with a walk-off grand slam, including that game and since, this team's 26-14 at the K. Since that walk-off home run by Bobby Witt. Now, you know, they're also sort of a different team that you can see, like, the fun happening. They're 8-4-1 in home series in that time. The one is when they split the two-game set with the Cardinals. But 8-4-1. They're winning series at home. They're winning games at home, which draws more, should be drawing more crowds out there. And I think, you know, if they go on the road and they come back against Baltimore next week, if they go on the road and take care of business, you know, win a couple series and come back, you know, sitting in the spot they are, let's say they're still playing 600 baseball, right around there, they're right around the Guardians, I think you probably start to see the crowd show up a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Because then you would have more of a sample size and you'd be getting closer to school getting out. But also, you'd be seeing this team continue to win at home. And there's nothing better than going out to the K and watching things like this, okay? If you were just watching it at home, you're like, man, I wish I was out there. You're watching an 11-run, you know, win over the weekend, like, man, I wish I was out there. And watching them lose 5-0, you don't want to be out there in 90-degree weather. It's you don't want to do that. And you can put up with the weather if they're playing like this.
It also helps when you have a legit MVP candidate.
Yeah.
We're not talking, again, about Eric Hosmer was great. And those teams were great. But I'm talking just specific players who were just electric. We're talking the Ronald Acuna Juniors, the Bryce Harpers, the Mike Trouts. Kansas City has one with Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
Like, he is legit. We're not talking about the next tier down guys. We're not talking about the Correas, the Bregmans. We're talking about the legit top five player in Major League Baseball. The Royals have one with Bobby Witt Jr.
How close can they play to this offense? Like, I mean, it's, you can't expect, you know, three, four different guys to be OPSing at 1,000. You know, Velasquez is at 922. He's in third. He's the third best OPS on the team at 922. That's not reasonable to maintain that level of play. But, you know, MJ is crushing the ball and Bobby Witt is playing like you're talking about. How close to this level of offense do you think they can get to on a consistent basis?
I don't think they're super far off. In fact, when I look at a lineup with a lot of young hitters, you'd imagine when they're going to struggle the most is April. It's cold sometimes. You're still getting your feet under you. I mean, Nelson Velasquez hasn't been an everyday player before. So mm-hmm. I thought going in after his bad spring, it wouldn't have shocked me if he started, you know, 2 for his first 20 or something like that. And he had 8 or 9 strikeouts. But clearly, spring training just doesn't matter, right? Because Nelson Velasquez wasn't good, and he's been one of the best hitters in this lineup, at least power-wise.
Yeah.
I think overall, this can be an offense that can hover around the top 8, top 7 in the American League. And I think there's a lot more power to this lineup, too. Yeah. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be fine. Garcia is going to be fine. Salvi's going to be Salvi. If you get MJ and Velasquez to hit somewhat close to this, that's a lineup I don't think a lot of pitchers want to see. I mean, 1-6, and then you talk about Hunter Renfro, 6-game hitting streak, by the way. We all, or not me at least, but portion of fans wanted him gone after the first 15 at-bats that he had. I think even on his worst years, he's still running into 20 home runs, yeah, and that's your 7-hole hitter. So that looks at the bottom of the lineup. Kyle Isbell, elite defensively, just be league average or slightly below league average. Then you go 1-9. There are holes. Everybody's got holes in their lineup. But when your top 6 are hitting like this, and even if it's maybe 70% of that, 80% of that, there's still enough there in the tank. And I got to, you know, credit Alex Zumwalt, Keone Duren. I think that, you know, the hard hit rate was important last year to say that these guys do have major league pop. They've got power. But now they've started to launch the ball. And that is the difference,
yeah,
right? I think we all kind of complained about, well, they're hitting the ball hard last year, but it was right at somebody. Well, when you launch the ball and you lift the ball and it leaves the yard or it gets into the gap, then your batting average is going to go up. You don't have to complain about the hard hit rate for a ground ball to second base. And that's the difference in these hitters this year. MJ can do that. Vinny can do that. Velasquez can do that. Perez. Bobby's now doing it. Garcia's now doing it. And that's why we're seeing these 9-run innings, these 7-run innings, because they all hit the ball incredibly hard. And when you put it in the air, it's got a much better chance to go out than when you're just pounding it into the ground.
So, like, the offensive ranking, like you talked about, can they be a top 7 offense right around there? So I went and looked back at the 13 games for last year, first 13 games, where they were ranking in offense. In 2023, batting average, where would you guess they were ranked 1 through 30?
Yeah, I'll go 1 through 30, you said?
Yeah.
I'll go,
well,
I'll
1
go
through 40, I don't care.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'll go 30.
30?
I'll go 27.
They were 30th. They were dead last. First 13 games, they batted 202 as a team. 202. What about on-base percentage?
That's got to be 30.
I will also go 30.
30. Yeah. They were 30th last year. They were getting on base the first 13 games at a 264 clip. Oh.
Let me guess slugging.
Slugging. Dylan, what do you want to guess for slugging for this team? 30? You're going 30? 30th. They were 30th in slugging. Now, you guys can put together the OPS with that one. Oddly enough, 5th.
31.
I'm not sure how they were 5th, but that's where it'd be. Yes, they were. They did come in 32nd. They were behind
the top two AAA teams.
Yes, they were behind the Wahoos in Pensacola. Sorry. I mean, it's that they were really good. Yeah, they were behind the Naturals.
The Naturals.
Storm Chasers. Quad City were killing them.
Quad City was going off.
Runs. They didn't rank 30th.
29th.
They were 28th. Idiot.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about wow.
Negative Nancy
good
over
God.
Here.
Yeah, come on now.
home runs, they were 27th. They were crushing the ball. I mean, if they were hitting it, they were hitting home runs. We all remember that last year. And then weighted runs created. They were 30th, oddly enough, with that. Just as an example, 13 games. Weighted runs created last year, they had 57. Right now, they're at 117. 60 more. 60 points higher. So just looking at that, like this year, okay, so we talk about a top seven offense. Batting average 30th last year. They're 9th this year. Batting 264. 60 points better than a year ago. On base percentage, they're 12th. 62 points higher than a year ago. Slugging percentage, they're 4th. In Major League Baseball, 4th. 119 points higher through the first 13 games than what they were slugging last year. OPS, they're 4th. 181 points, almost 200 points higher in OPS than a year ago. Runs, they're 6th. Home runs, they're 3rd. And weighted runs created, they're 7th. So across, it's 13 games, small sample size. Take a drink. Thank you, Sterling. There's no beer in here. But like you were talking about, Jack, can this offense be close to like a top 10 offense? It's what we're seeing right now. And it's just... We see it on the field, but the numbers back it up. Just last year, how god-awful the offense was, and nobody was hitting, except for Vinny, and that was really it. Bobby was struggling, and MJ was in his slump, and Salvi, is he old? You know, what's going on there? But now it's across the board. I mean, 120 points higher in slug and almost 200 points higher in OPS through 13 games.
I absolutely love the whole mantra of, well, you just can't hit home runs in Kauffman. Because you had Joey Gathright. He wasn't running into one.
He didn't
Terrence Gore and Jerrod Dyson weren't going to run into one. Now you have guys who can hit some bombs. There's differences here. I will also say, where's the outlier? Okay, we talked about Nelson, MJ, and to an extent Bobby, which I'll get to Bobby and MJ in just one moment here. But the other guys, Michael Garcia, who has an OPS of 730. That's sustainable, right? That's about league average,
yeah.
Right? Salvi, 841. Maybe a little high, but nothing crazy, right? We're not talking astronomically high.
But it's not like he hasn't had
an 850 home run season. So
yeah, so he can OPS at 800.
Vinny, 641. Now he's on a great stretch right now, but he's 641 OPSing right now.
I think he's capable of pacing at a 641 throughout the season.
Kyle Isabel, 650, which I think we're all basically, this is who he is.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Hunter Renfroe, as we've mentioned, who's not got going yet at all. Who's OPSing, what is that now, 523. My point is, it's not like you're seeing a whole bunch of the bottom end of the guys that you know are going to drop down to earth all of a sudden who are just having these crazy starts. It's Bobby. It's MJ taking a step forward and Nelson taking a step forward. That's really it. It's not like you're seeing everyone out here with OPSs of 900. And that's, to me, what makes this more sustainable. I believe in it more. And going back to the process very quickly, where does Bobby rank average exit velo, barrel percentage, and hard hit percentage?
99th.
100 percentile on all three. His average exit velo is 99.4.
My negativity came through there.
Can't stop Debbie Downer.
I apologize.
And MJ Melendez, very quickly, is 93rd percentile, average exit velo, barrel percentage 95th, hard hit percentage 89th. So, again, these aren't outliers. These aren't just booty knocks in the words of Rex Hudler.
Booty knocks.
I like the booty knocks.
They're not just booty knocks. This is, again, why this makes me believe this is more sustainable than anything else.
Well, you bring up MJ Melendez, too, and why I believe it's not an outlier. Look at his numbers in the second half last year. He was probably the Royals' second-best hitter. His OBP was north of 350. He was well above league average in WRC+. The power was there. The walk rate came back a little bit. I think it was north of 10%. So you look at what he did second half of last year. You look at what he did in spring training. Take what you want for spring training. But he was very good. And then you look at this first part of 2024, the first 13 games. He's been well above league average. So you tell me, what is he now? What type of hitter is he now? Are you going to take the first half of last year, or are you going to take after Alex Zumwalt made the adjustment with him in the second half, he changed his hand placement a little bit, then adjusted it again in the spring, and we're seeing an even better hitter. So to me, the surge of MJ Melendez, yes, is important, yes, does help this offense, but I think it's almost a continuation of the second half. This isn't like, where did this MJ Melendez come from? This was the MJ Melendez in the second half. The Royals just weren't competitive at all at that point in the season.
I didn't update the numbers recently, but looking at what MJ Melendez had done from the end of last year to this year, I think I have it in my notes in my phone, if I had my phone somewhere. Either way, he was pacing.
I stole it, sorry.
You son of a gun. Here it is. He was pacing a few days ago, if you carry over what he, because I put these together for Les Norman. And so it was, if you carried over what he was doing through, you know, the 50 games to end the season last year, and then, you know, to look at the first number of games this year, he was pacing at like a 35 home run pace, 42 doubles, and was OPSing it at 900. And that was through 60 games. That was to end the season last year, and through the first 10 games, he played nine. And that's where he was. And so, to your point, I'm in agreement. I think you take into account. Plus, I think there's an element of you have an off season. Like, you don't just continue. It's like, oh, this is a great stretch. He had a great stretch into the season, had an off season, came back and has picked up what he was doing last year. I do want to talk about some coaching. You talked about Zumwalt. You talked about those guys. Maybe not enough conversation about Brian Sweeney and what we're seeing from the starting staff, what we're seeing from the bullpen. I want to talk about those things on the other side of the break. And eventually we'll get into some college basketball today with you know, people losing their mind over Mark Pope being hired, which is just great, fascinating. I love the UK or just message boards in general. And so there's a few message board fun things there. But also I think there might be a question of what it might say about the landscape of college basketball. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Matt Derrick at 11 o'clock. Mick Schaefer later on in the show. Cuts before the show is over. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Matt Derrick will be our guest coming up at 11 o'clock. You know, we've seen the Royals look like the Astros yesterday, the way the Astros looked yesterday in the game. We've seen the Royals do that a number of times. You know how it's going really well for the Royals right now is they had their second baseman and shortstop collide, and it still turned out to be a highlight. Instead of Ken Harvey getting hit in the back. You know, or Harvey and Grimsley colliding and hitting him in the face.
It's banana ball, baby.
You know, or
still Grimsley's fault.
Yes, or Chip Ambrose dropping a pop fly to left field to continue a 19-game losing streak that would have won the game. Like,
dude,
we've seen
Velasquez did that yesterday, though. It was 9-9.
He did. It was just happened. It wasn't the last out in the ninth, in the top of the ninth to end the losing streak that ended up resulting in a rally that you lost that game. It wasn't that. But you've got a second baseman that leaps over the shortstop, colliding with him, and then the shortstop makes the play, and everybody's like, oh, that was fun. That was fun, instead of wearing the paper bags over your head and seeing some of the things that took place with this Royals team. But also, like, the Astros, and look, the Royals are playing awesome. The Astros aren't playing well right now. And by evidence, by just, it's a small thing, but it can be a big thing through the course of a game and certainly the course of the season. Bobby Witt scores from second on the, was it MJ? No, yeah, that was a double. However, Bobby Witt ended up scoring. Maybe it was Nelson Velasquez that ended up driving him in. So Bobby Witt's coming around third. There was a play at the plate. I think he would have been safe, but there was a play at the plate. And Diaz is waiting for it, and it gets cut by Hunter Brown. And he's like, dude, what the hell, man? There was a play. Then Nelson Velasquez is up. Vinny Pasquantino at third, MJ Melendez at second, and he hits the shot into right center, They come up throwing. Vinny scores. MJ stops at third, and they don't cut it. And Velasquez goes to second. Like, those two plays, like, just small things like that. You got to play at home, and you cut it. Then a guy stops at third, and you don't cut it, and Velasquez moves up to second base and then scores on the next at bat with a single up the middle. Like, that's when you know a team is struggling, but keep a team struggling. They put 9 runs on the board. They didn't score 1 run off of that. Like, the Astros aren't playing good baseball right now, and the Royals will go through a stretch where they're not playing good baseball, but you're banking the wins right now because of the way they're playing.
It's the mental focus part of it, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, of that part here on Hunter Brown not cutting it off, Nelson Velasquez had the know-how of, I got to get a second.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
He could have had, hey, I drove in a run. Oh, nice. Why didn't MJ score? And I'm walking back, not even looking at the ball, going to first base. And he decided to get his ass to second base. Yep. And that, to me, you didn't see a lot last year, right? We saw so many times there were just mental lapses of, I remember there was one series late in August, September. It was Dairon Blanco, like, didn't slide. At one point, going in third, and he got tagged out. Like, it was a close bang-bang play in extra innings, and he didn't slide. And it was just that was the mental capacity not being there or not being focused. And that clearly has been an emphasis, mm-hmm. not only in the beginning of the season. It was a huge emphasis in spring training of when you're out there, when you're on the field, everything's constantly moving, and you got to be thinking one step ahead of the opponent.
I think one of the underrated things that may have gotten Vinny out of his slump was the night before was that hustle to first on the play. Mm-hmm. I can't remember,
Bregman.
Jack, who made the
it was
error.
Bregman at third, Bregman, yeah.
And it's
tied
like,
the game.
How many times is it a loaf, you know, I'm out, I'm not going to pull a hammy here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, I give a damn, and I don't care. I'm going to make a play here, whether, you know, I shouldn't or not. I'm a first baseman. Nobody would have blinked an eye if he would have been jogging down the line, but he's hustling.
Yeah.
And that might have just put him over the edge and got him out of the slump, you know, right there.
Yeah. And his at-bats were good. Like, he was process over results. I mean, we talk about that so often. And when we discuss, like, the just the mental capacity and being focused in a game and that being an emphasis, you know, I've credited with the Chiefs coaching staff as a big reason why they draft well. They draft well, and then they develop them. And while we've talked about, well, development, a lot of times it's simplistic to go back and talk about, well, Dayton Moore's not drafting well. Well, Dayton Moore's draft picks. Dayton Moore's the draft picks. They're not hitting on this guy. They're not hitting on that guy. And some of it can be development because, you know, we discussed for 5 years we talked pitching coach. And I don't know what this pitching staff would look like with Cal Eldred. But I'm going to guess.
Don't even bring it up,
sorry.
Jason. I'm sorry. Just don't even bring it up.
I'm going to guess that Cole Reagans doesn't tap into something with the previous regime where it's like, oh, my God, they stole Cole Reagans from the Rangers. Right. The Chiefs stole Lejarius Sneed in the fourth round. Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams, look what they're doing. Charvarius Ward, they stole him from the Cowboys. Well, they got the guy. They developed him. And they deployed him in a way that was beneficial to the team and his skill set, and now the Royals actually feel like they've got guys who can develop, guys who can coach, and it's like, well, once you get to the major league level, does the pitching coach matter? I think so. Yeah, I think so. Does Patrick Mahomes really need a quarterback coach? You know, these wide receivers, do they really need a wide receiver coach? Blamire sucks. The wide receiver issues because Blamire's terrible. He's awful. Do you really need a wide receiver coach in the NFL?
Well, dude, they fixed veterans. They fixed Aroldis Chapman. Like, we're not talking a young dude. Aroldis Chapman was basically done.
Aroldipus.
Came to Kansas City. They fixed him. Then he left and, quite frankly, kind of fell off again. Like, the Royals did have something. What's interesting is it's all been big lefties who throw very hard that we've seen the biggest success from. So, Daniel Lynch, come on. I guess it was different. You know,
he might be too far gone with the previous regime.
Yeah, that's previous regime. But again, I think there is something there. We're not just talking young guys. They found something. They even said before they brought Aroldis in, we think we can fix you. They did.
It's a cool part, too, about the new era and Brian Sweeney. Also, you know, having two pitching coaches, right? Not just one voice that you're hearing from. And there's a same thing with the hitting coaches. That's new baseball as well. You see a lot of teams out there have two hitting coaches, two pitching coaches, just more voices to hear from. But not only did Brian Sweeney and the crew, you know, get some of these guys to improve it. Cole Reagans won, Aroldis Chapman another, James MacArthur, who was a 27-year-old double-A guy struggling. The analytics department said, that guy's got a great curveball. Let's see if we can fix him. Now he's the team's closer, and he was excellent in September last year. But what's important about this, too, is it weeded out who couldn't pitch in this new regime, right?
Yeah.
Brad Keller. They gave Brad Keller new pitches, and bless his heart, it didn't work for him. But that showed he's not a big league starter. Daniel Lynch, another one. They tried it with Daniel Lynch. He still could have an impact on this team, but he's not where I think we once thought he could be, a frontline guy, a one or a two. Brady Singer was kind of on the fence, but now we're seeing the more he's willing to throw more pitches in these new ones and spots like that, it's helping him. So it wasn't just about let's fix these guys coming in. It's also about we can try to fix him and it doesn't work, but that just shows they're not what we want long term.
I'm still laughing over the bless your heart. I can't believe you just told a Major League Baseball player, bless your heart.
Bless your heart. You did try that new pitch, though.
Bless your heart.
You know, you tried.
He tried.
The guy started an opening day. He's had a pretty decent career from what
a
maybe
couple
he was
of opening
be,
days.
Yeah, that's true. He started a couple opening days.
Hard to believe they fixed Jordan Lyles, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's just going out there and throwing BBs.
No pressure.
No pressure whatsoever, just showing up, giving a little smile and a wink as he walks off the mound.
Shoving it to the team that drafted him back-to-back days. He's like, you see what you're missing? I was your first-round pick. I'm doing it over here now.
Dummies.
Closing out games. Not getting the saves. He's not your close, but I mean.
That's a GF right there. Put that little tally in his baseball reference page.
But actually, back Jordan in his baseball Lyles. Card. It's a long season, and you know that he is a guy who can give you innings. He makes sense on this team. He didn't necessarily last year, but there was always the thoughts of, are a contending team who needs a fifth starter or a long reliever, would they actually trade, not take on the contract, but trade for a guy like Jordan Lyles? Well, he makes sense on the Royals now. Again, you can have the high upside fifth starter with Alec Marsh when you have the insurance of, okay, who cares if Jordan Lyles goes out and gets shelled, which right now he's clearly not, actually. These low-leverage situations.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But in a long season, as much as we would all like all five dudes to go out and throw 30-plus starts, how realistic is that? You have a contingency plan of a guy who's pitched fairly well, not for the Royals, but in his career, and you actually found this the other day, he's pitched well on good teams.
Yeah, when he's been on good teams, like, his numbers are pretty good. When he's been on bad teams, his numbers have been bad. Maybe that's a little bit because of him. He also might be a front runner. You know, he also might be a guy that, like, last year, it's an evaluation season. I'm making $9 million. If I go out there and throw six innings of, you know, and really battle through this, doesn't matter. We're down 5-0 right now.
And again, he's a guy who's maybe just sitting here going, I don't want to be the dude that blows this for the young guys. I don't want to be a dude that blows this for a contending team. Again, I'm not trying. I never thought I'd be on the Jordan Lyles make sense in the Royals camp. But
Sterling advocating for Jordan Lyles to take the
no,
spot of Cole Reagans.
No, don't you dare.
Get Cole Reagans
Jason,
out of there. Put
I will
jump across this table here, come after you with arms and teeth and fingernails.
But I don't hate Jordan Lyles on this current iteration of the Kansas City Royals.
Well, I don't think you need to apologize for being an apologist to Jordan Lyles, because I also think, you know, it's easy to do it when you're making $8.5 million. Like, I think they went to Jordan Lyles in the same way they went to Mac Utrero and said, we're going to let you manage this team. We want you to be the guy. It's going to be really ugly in year one. Like, you are going to be put up in front of the media and this fan base, and you're going to explain why you're losing 106 games. I think when they went to Jordan Lyles, they said, we're going to give you a two-year deal. Here's some money. Your goal this year is not to have the best of your career. It's really to save the young guys we're evaluating and save the bullpen for those guys. Like, you may have your worst year. You're going to wear it. There will be nights you give up five in the first inning, and we need you to go through six. And that ERA is never going to look good. And you know what? As a man, as somebody that can respect Major League pitchers and professionals, that would be a knock to my pride if I'm like, man, I am getting paid to do this, but this is going to be really bad. And he answered all the media's questions all year long. He knew he had to wear it. And in the end, it did save the bullpen for guys like Cole Reagans on some of his outings, for Brady Singer and stuff like that.
I just think, as much as we talked about Cal Eldred, like the conversation around Sweeney, you know, and just this coaching staff, because I always found it interesting that, you know, we would talk about the prospects and the lack of development. And then when they get to the big leagues, it's like, well, you know, defending of a Cal, what is he supposed to do? OK, well, we do that while also then on the other side of the coin, talking about how great Rusty Kuntz is in the outfielders and, you know, coaching up the outfield. And look what he did with Alex Gordon. Look what he did with other guys. And he's such a great, you know, coach to have on the team, and what he does with. Like, okay, so we can't talk about how much we love Rusty Kuntz and what he does for the big league team and how good of a coach he is and then dismiss other coaches that aren't doing their job and those particular spots are struggling. Yes, you got to have talent. And when Cal Eldred's dealing with Daniel Lynch and Brad Keller and those guys, it's like, all right, what really is he supposed to do? I get it. I understand that. Totally. But you also have to have the ability to tap in to what may be there for different guys. And you got to, you know, have that ability at the big league level to recognize what's going to work for a certain guy. Okay, like you talked about, MacArthur. This guy's got a really good curve. Here are the analytics. You got to use them. You got to appreciate them. You got to find a way to implement them. And you got to believe in them. And the previous regime didn't do that. They didn't really believe in them. It was, well, it's, you know, it's a little gut feel here, a little gut feel there. Whereas you can look at the analytics, the shape of the curveball, shape of his fastball, and go, okay, this is going to play in this particular way. And MacArthur comes in, and now he's a guy in high leverage situations and is a closer. Where I don't think the previous regime recognizes MacArthur. They see the numbers in AA, and they go, you know, I guess if we need somebody, if we're in a real tough pinch, you know, maybe we bring this guy up. But not to the level of I recognize this in him, and I can project what he's going to look like if we get this other thing out of him.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's the influence a little bit of Tampa Bay and Mac Quattrero and Paul Hoover coming over. Yep. That is something that made Tampa Bay special. They didn't need to spend any money because they'd identify some 25-year-old guy in AAA that had, you know, 14 strikeouts per nine, had a lot of walks, but like, we'll get him up here, we'll work with him, and he's going to be a high-leverage guy. You don't need to spend any money when you're finding all that type of talent.
It's like those bad detective books. That was the old regime of, I'm going with my gut. But it's not a book. You know, they're those horrible detective books. Well, I'm going my gut here, Sarge. It's like, no, the blood's right there. We have the numbers. We know this dude. Well, I'm going my gut. That was the old regime. This one, as you're mentioning, they're the analytics. They're going and running the tests. That's the difference here.
Yeah, there was blood all over the field at Kauffman the last few years. It was a massacre, typically, for those guys. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and continue rolling more zone next. All right, wrapping up this first hour, Matt Derrick's going to join us in the next hour talking some Chiefs football, some NFL football. A lot of Royals talk here in the first hour, and why not? Because they are a lot of fun to watch. So you head on the road and get ready for the Mets coming up tonight with Michael Wacha taking on Luis Severino. Sean Manaea was scheduled yesterday to pitch tonight, and now it's Severino, so had to go and change my format. Ridiculous. Put the format for today together yesterday. I'm glad I double-checked. Jerks. Jack, thank you, man, as always, brother.
Hey, always a blast, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Absolutely. Sterling, I appreciate it. You're leaving, too?
You want me to?
No, I didn't know. I was unaware. Like, are you staying the next 3 hours?
This is awkward.
We'll let Matt try to figure it out. Matt Derrick will be with us, and he'll get to the bottom of what the next 3 hours will look like.